Good evening, everyone, in person and on Zoom. Thank you for coming to our second quarterly community safety meeting of 2025. I'm Officer Megan Drake. I'm in the Crime Prevention Unit here at the River Forest Police Department. Before we begin, if you could join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you all. We're going to begin tonight's meeting with a video message from Chief Jim O'Shea.
Good evening. If you're seeing this video, that means on my last day of work, I have run out the door and have already started enjoying my retirement. Today is Wednesday, April 30th, and welcome to the quarterly community safety meeting for the River Forest Police Department. I just want to thank all of the residents for allowing me to serve them over 30 years and for being their chief of police for the past 8. This is a great community. Continue to work with law enforcement to keep it safe and look out for your neighbors. Please all remember all the good things we've talked about over the years with regard to keeping safe, locking doors, using lights, using alarms, and not exposing yourself to unneeded or unwanted dangers. Once again, you got a great police force here, and starting tomorrow, May 1st, you're going to have a great new police chief, Jim Greenwood, who's been promoted from deputy chief up to the new chief's position. You're also going to have a new deputy chief, Mike Straczynski, who's moving up from the commander position. And you're going to have an amazing new patrol division commander, Marty Grill, who's being promoted from the rank of sergeant to the position of commander. Once again, I just want to thank everyone for the time that I had to serve you. And also, please look out for each other and stay safe. Have a nice evening.
Now I will introduce the River Forest Police Department Deputy Chief James Greenwood.
Hello, my name is James Greenwood, and today we celebrated Chief Jim O'Shea's retirement after his distinguished 30-plus year career with the police department. We thank you, Jim, for your leadership, sacrifice, and positive impact on the RFPD and River Forest. Wish you all the best in retirement. I've been appointed as Chief of Police by President Ducey. I want to express my gratitude to President Ducey and the members of the Village Board for having the confidence in me to serve the River Forest community as the next Chief of Police. I also want to thank Manager Matt Walsh and the management team for their support. I extend my gratitude to all the men and women of the River Forest Police Department, past and present, that make the department a great place when we are at our home away from home, where coworkers are more like family than friends. To the River Forest community, I want to express how deeply honored and appreciative I am for this opportunity. The department will continue the great level of customer service that is expected of us. Please contact me at any time with any questions, suggestions, or concerns. Tonight, we continue our series of community safety meetings. With April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, the guest speakers will present information regarding awareness of human trafficking and sexual exploitation prevention and community engagement. Thank you very much.
I would now like to present our first guest speaker. We have Gina Parisi. She's the executive director for Traffic Free, and she is being joined by Leah McGrath this evening.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having us. I'm going to very quickly share my screen. And while I do that, I just want to share that Leah and I are going to provide a lot of information today about human trafficking, and we will focus on sex trafficking. And just know that human trafficking is a very complex issue. So we encourage you, if you're interested in learning more, to definitely check out the resources. You'll have access to a copy of these slides, and you'll be able to learn more information from all the resources that we have available there, or feel free to reach out to us as well if you have any other questions. So I should be sharing my screen now. Leah, can you see that?
Yes.
We can see it as well.
Okay, great. Thanks. So like I said, we'll provide a high-level overview of human trafficking today, but please feel free to ask questions at the end or to contact us if you have any questions. And just a little bit about Traffic Free. We have been around since 2008, and we provide education awareness about human trafficking. And we used to have a drop-in center on the southwest side of the city where adult female victims could come and just have their immediate needs met for the day. We did have to close it due to COVID, so now we continue to focus on education and awareness. So I'm going to hand it over to Leah to start us off today.
Thank you, Dina. And thank you for having us today. We're glad to be able to discuss such an important topic that really needs awareness. So the first thing we want to do is discuss some of the main commonly discussed types of trafficking: sex trafficking, labor trafficking, and domestic servitude. Obviously, we're discussing sex trafficking today, but it's also important to understand some of the other types of human trafficking that can occur. So we're going to just touch on those a little bit to give you a bit of an understanding. Obviously, we always encourage more research if you're interested or have a need to know more about that topic. The first one we're going to discuss is labor trafficking. And labor trafficking is exploiting someone for forced labor. So that can involve deception, non-payment for services, unfair wages, threats. And some of the industries where you might see labor trafficking or it's commonly found in are listed on your screen. They include things like the hospitality industry, food service, construction, cleaning services. And some of the common themes that we see with these industries that make tracking and identifying labor trafficking more difficult is some of these industries are seasonal. Some of them have limited oversight. And so all of those make it more difficult to notice a pattern with people who might be being trafficked. And today we're here to talk about sex trafficking. And sex trafficking occurs all over the world, including in the United States. And it can take on a lot of different forms. So we've listed some here on your screen. Sex trafficking or sexual exploitation involves the exchange of something of value for sex or sexual acts. And that can occur online or in person. And again, it can take on various forms, lots of different forms, including escort services, illicit massages, strip clubs, pornography. It's not just one type of process. And then if we look specifically in Illinois, it's estimated that there's over 1 million people being trafficked right now in the United States. And in 2017, Illinois ranked 11th in the nation for the numbers of reported cases. In 2023, Cook County Sheriff said, "I cannot emphasize enough to you, there is literally no end to the number of victims we come across. So we're just overwhelmed." I think that statement gives a really good sense of the scope of the problem that we're dealing with, and all the more reason why we're, you know, educating ourselves about it today. The numbers on the slide will give you a little bit of a glimpse of what's happening in Illinois, but we want to remind you that these are only reported data. It's a well-hidden crime, so it's hard to get accurate numbers on what exactly is going on, but this gives you a little touch point for some information on that. Okay, and although trafficking can happen to anybody, right? It happens across all demographics. It's important to know that there are some groups that are at higher risk. Traffickers are very strategic in identifying and exploiting people's vulnerabilities. And they'll target individuals who maybe lack a support system or who face economic hardship, social hardship, or emotional hardships. They're also very good and very knowledgeable about knowing that a lot of these groups will not be listened to as well if they are trying to find help or services. There's additional barriers for these groups finding getting help for the situation. So some of our at-risk groups include women. Women make up a vast majority of trafficking, sex trafficking cases, but men are trafficked as well, so it's important to acknowledge that. Women of color, youth and minors. We're going to discuss more, and Gina's going to discuss more later why specifically youth are at a higher risk, but some of that is they're in an age where there might be more risk-taking or there's a higher need for acceptance. But again, Gina will cover that later. Youth experiencing homelessness, LGBTQ youth, youth in the foster care system, and youth who have experienced sexual abuse. And actually, there's some data that says that more than 80% of people who have been trafficked had previous experience with sexual abuse. So let's discuss a little bit about how traffickers find their victims and, make them engage in some of these behaviors. There's some missions, so we're going to cover that as well. Traffickers can be family members, friends, significant others. There's a misperception that most people are grabbed off the street into a white van trafficking. Actually, a majority of victims know and are go through a relationship with their trafficker. Traffickers take time to get to know their victims. They select them, and they go through a period of grooming. So they're going to take the time to, while they get to know the people, their victims, they're going to learn what their needs are, what their vulnerabilities are, so that they can go ahead and exploit that in the future and use that against them. And needs can be anything from housing, food, clothing, to some more intangibles like acceptance, love, things like that. Gina, did you want to give an example?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Leah. So this can, like Leah said, it really follows a very similar pattern in most cases, but the details of it can be different. It can look like something like, someone, a youth who's, living at home, attending school, but they're feeling just like very out of place at school, looking for relationships, looking to fit in with their peers, not getting along maybe with their parents or wanting to like just explore their own world. So they may start hanging out at the mall or at the local park, and then they're approached by an older man who starts to engage with them and show them attention and buy them gifts and take them out on dates. And soon this develops into a romantic relationship. And this can go on for months. And it seems great because the peer is feeling welcomed in a community. They're feeling seen and loved and getting those needs met that they might not be getting met in the school setting or even in their home setting. But then over a period of time, this adult, this person that they now have been dating, have fallen in love with, comes back to them and tells them, you know what? I've really done a lot for you. I've given you all these items. I've loved you. I've given you a place to belong. You now need to start paying me back for all that I've done to you. And this is when we'll start to see the trafficking and the abuse take place. It can also appear more in the form of, if you loved me, you would do this for me. Or there's really extreme threats that the traffickers will use. It could be threats to hurt them or their family, threats to expose them in some manner. And so it typically will start off with the various forms of relationship building and then leads into manipulation, abuse and trafficking. And so we want to share some indicators with you so you can be aware of what should you be looking for if you suspect that someone you know is being trafficked. And before we really go into them, I do just want to point out that there are a number of different indicators that will help you identify if someone is a victim. But you really want to look for multiple indicators. So just noticing one or two indicators in someone doesn't necessarily mean that they're being trafficked. It's when you start to notice multiple indicators in someone. And typically when you notice multiple indicators over an extended period of time. And so just keep that in mind if you ever do suspect that someone you know, someone you're working with may be a victim. And so some indicators to look out for, definitely look out for signs of branding. Many traffickers do brand their victims either with tattoos or jewelry. Also pay attention to someone's story. So they'll either have a very well-rehearsed story or a very inconsistent story. And the reason for that being is that many traffickers do tell their victims a story they should share if they're ever approached. So their story does sound very well-rehearsed. But on the other hand, if they haven't been told a story to share, their story likely sounds very scattered and inconsistent because they're trying to hide what's really going on. So definitely pay attention to someone's story and also pay attention to signs of physical abuse because many victims are experiencing severe physical abuse as well. Pay attention to signs of bruises and markings. Are they wearing baggy clothing, especially baggy clothing in warmer weather, to try and cover up those physical abuse signs? Some other things to pay attention to are their behavior and their physical, their body language. A lot of victims we find really struggle to make direct eye contact with someone. They show a lot of signs of hypervigilance, or this will typically look like someone who is very tense all the time, who's not relaxed, who is typically very anxious and on high alert consistently. You also want to pay attention to someone's money and their identification. Many traffickers control the money and identification of their victims. And so pay attention to those items. You can even ask questions like, do you have your identification? If not, who has it? And then pay attention to the relationships that they're in. Are they in a relationship with someone, either a friendship or a romantic relationship? And does this relationship to appear to be very controlling and dominating? So if you are seeing this person with them, this person is consistently monitoring them. They won't let them go anywhere alone. But even if they're not together, is this person constantly calling them, constantly checking on them? So definitely pay attention to the relationship that this person is in. And also pay attention to the verbiage that they're using. And so there is a whole within the trafficking world, there's a ton of different lingo and slang words, and you'll be able to check out a list of these words on the resource on this page. But definitely pay attention to the verbiage that someone's using because a lot of these words will sound unusual, they sound out of context. So a word like daddy manager used in the right context would not be questionable. But when they use it to refer to someone that they're dating, to someone that they're working for, it can seem rather unusual and can be a sign that they're being trafficked. So pay close attention to the words that they're using. And if you are really, suspecting that someone you know is being trafficked, I would encourage you to look up the current slang words. That way you can pay attention to listen for them when you're in conversation with that person. And when it comes to youth, really pay attention to a couple different things. One thing to look for is those material goods. And so a lot of times traffickers will use material goods to engage with potential victims. Like we had talked about, they'll buy them things. So this could look like, a youth, and this happens in adult cases as well, but we see it a lot with youth. All of a sudden a youth who is typically in hand-me-down clothes, or even if it's your own child or a child's friend and they have a new phone, but they can't explain where it came from, that could be a sign that they're being trafficked. A youth who's often reported missing or who's frequently late or absent from school or work, or someone who's just working long or unusual hours. So really pay attention to those behaviors.
Thanks, Gina. And so we wanted to have a couple suggestions for you all about how to help keep youth safe. There's so many different things coming at them at this age, but the first thing really important is to have open conversations with the kids in your life, the youth in your life. And it's an ongoing conversation. It's not a one and done conversation. And they don't always want to hear what you have to say, but keep trying. It does sink in. It is meaningful to have somebody who cares talking to them about these issues. So you want to have conversations about trafficking, about sexual assault, how to stay safe. They're not easy conversations, but they're important. I have four teenagers, and one of the ways we do that in my house is we discuss things that are in the news. There's several high-profile cases right now in the news. Different TV shows or movies that we watch, we'll pick little pieces out of those shows and say, well, how does this relate? Or what could they have done differently? Or What do you think about this situation? And also, we'll chat indirectly. Teenagers especially can be very defensive. So sometimes I'll turn to my husband and say, "Hey, did you hear this story about the trafficking situation that happened?" And so they can kind of hear what you're saying, without having it feel like it's being directly aimed at them. And this is a conversation you can have at all ages, just, basing it on their level of understanding or what they're capable of hearing. When the movie Frozen came out, I had a conversation with my kids about, okay, why do we think Anna was willing to get engaged to a guy she met one day earlier? Like, what's going on with her that makes her really need that situation? So it can look different at different ages and for different children, what they need. You want to make sure that youth know that no matter what is going on in their life, they can come to you. You want to stay calm, non-judgmental, and approachable so that if something scary or uncomfortable or weird happens, they know that you're a safe place for them to come talk to about it because they might really need that resource. And then you want to talk to them about how to respond in different situations. When I was younger, it was, hey, don't go anywhere with somebody. Don't get into a van with somebody, right? But it's more complex now. It's that plus. Do you know who you're talking to online? Do you know them in real life? So you want to talk to them about predators, both online and in person. Teach them that they don't owe anybody anything, right? If somebody says, you owe me a picture now, or you owe me for giving you housing or clothing, have that conversation with them. And have some rules in your family. One of the rules in our house is that if you don't know a person in real life, that you're not friends with them on social media. We're not friends with people that just pop up and you don't know they're an actual person. You want to encourage youth to be aware of their surroundings, and that includes people. You want to trust your gut about situations and people. You hear so many people say, "Well, I had this weird feeling, but I didn't want to be rude, or I didn't want to be wrong, or I didn't want to be ridiculed or left out." Teach them to hone their gut and really trust it. And you want to use caution when you're interacting with strangers, people that they're just meeting. Young people are going to meet a ton of people as they go through their life, but you want to teach them to be critical thinkers. There are a ton of good people out there, but make them earn the trust. Make sure you're asking those questions of why people are interacting with you and what they're looking for. With the advent of social media, traffickers have had a whole new environment in which to identify and go after potential victims. So you definitely want to consider using rules about your children's or other youth around you, their devices, computers, phones. I know a lot of people say they don't allow their children to have devices in their rooms at night. So that's just one option. You can decide what's right for your family or the youth in your life. There's parental controls that you can set. It's great to be able to watch somebody's location. My daughter and her friends all watch each other's locations to make sure each other get home safely at night. So that's you've got to be careful who knows your location because you don't want somebody that you don't trust watching your location, but those are all good ways to use technology in a helpful, safe way. And we also just wanted to mention a related issue of sextortion. Sextortion is often online, and they use a lot of the same tactics as traffickers, manipulating the victims into sharing images or engaging in actions, and they're often targeting youth. And so it's a different issue, but it's connected to human trafficking in some ways, and it's important for people to be aware of. So we want to just bring that up as well. And then, Gina, did you have any other comments for that? Any other thoughts there?
We just encourage people, and that was greatly how you presented that, to scan this QR code and you can download a whole
Thank
guide
you.
from Sugar Hope International. It's a an online guide that will help you give you different tips on how to talk to youth about these topics, but also give some information on how predators use online tools and social media to engage with youth. So I really encourage anyone who has youth in your life in any capacity to download that guide, and we'll provide you with a copy of these slides. So if you can't get to it right now, you'll have access to it later. And then there are so many other resources available as well. And so, like we said at the beginning, we definitely just provided you a high level overview of human trafficking, but this is a very complex issue with many different layers, but we do want you to be aware of the fact that there are resources available nationally and locally. The Chicagoland area has so many great, you know, organizations who are working to combat trafficking and to provide support to victims and survivors. So if you're ever in a trafficking situation or any type of sexual assault situation, you are not alone. There are services available. Of course, you can contact your local police department, but you can also reach out to some of the other numbers here. Salvation Army Stop It program has a 24-hour hotline for trafficking victims. Cook County Sheriff, their sheriff's office, the Special Victims Services Hotline, can be contacted for trafficking, sexual assault. And then a good number to remember is 211 Metro Chicago. And so this is good not just for trafficking or for sexual assault cases, but really for anything health and social service related. It's easy to remember. It's easy to tell others about. All you have to do is call 211 and they can help get you connected to different social and health services. And then if you visit our website by scanning this QR code or visit trafficfree.org/resources, we have a ton of different services throughout Cook County and DuPage County that you can look into. And we really do encourage you, if you have questions, concerns, anything that you would like to learn more about or talk about, please feel free to contact us at Traffic Free. You can reach us at gina@trafficfree.org. But I think we may have a few minutes left. If anyone has any questions right now, we'd love to answer them.
Gina and Leah, thank you so much. We're just checking with the audience. Do you guys have any questions? One question asked is if trafficking is mostly about the money for the traffickers.
Yes. I mean, yes, essentially, yes. The money, the power, it is the fastest growing organized crime. It's a $1 billion industry. It's very actually well structured, unfortunately. And I'm sure the police department can speak to this too. But I mean, some studies show it's soon going to surpass drug trafficking as the number one organized crime. And the reason for that being is when you sell a drug one time. You can't resell that drug, but you can sell one person over and over again. So yes, from a business standpoint, it is a lot more lucrative for the traffickers to be able to traffic a person versus drugs. So the money is a huge drive behind it. And it, just so everyone knows, it is very complex. There's a lot of systemic issues involved with this and different variables, but those gains to or access to financial means is a huge driver.
Gina, thank you. Any other questions? Gina and Leah, thank you both so much for presenting tonight. We really appreciate your time and all the information you shared. And as she mentioned, she has provided me kindly with her PowerPoint slides. So we do have access to those resources that we can make available either to you via email or however, if you just want to let me know, I'd be happy to get them to you. Thank you both very much again. I am going to introduce our next guest speaker. We have Melanie Martin. She is the managing attorney with the Chicago Alliance Against Sexual Exploitation.
Hi, good evening. Thank you so much for having me today. So I am here to explain to you the legal services that are offered at the Chicago Alliance Against Sexual Exploitation. I prepared a small printout that I actually stole from our website just so there can be a visual and like a reference point while I'm talking, because it is quite a lot and sometimes it's hard to understand the types of legal services that we have and why we do things a certain way. But again, I'm hoping that this will at least help guide your thinking. So if you come across someone who has a legal issue or has been assaulted in some way, you can help point them in the right direction. So again, we have a complete legal department. We have quite a few attorneys that have varying backgrounds, all in the realm of gender-based violence and sexual assault. And the crux of what we do really depends on what the survivor needs. So we do have survivor-based services. We like to have them come to us, explain what happened, and then they tell us what routes they're really looking for. So they can say, I'm a college student. Maybe I was assaulted at school. I'm not sure what I want to do yet, but I think I want to make a police report. So if we have someone come to us and we point them towards our criminal services, and those services are a little bit different than what people may usually think when you think of a criminal case, because we here in our country have a two-party system. It's usually just the state versus the defendant. But for survivors, they rarely have an opportunity to be heard themselves in court. So through our organization, we're able to support them throughout various stages of the case. So if the case is uncharged, we can help them make the report, help assert their rights, help fill in some gaps that the police or the detective may have in pushing the case forward. But we call that the assertion of the victim's rights. And there is a whole portion of the Illinois Constitution that has a crime victim's Bill of Rights in there, in case you're unfamiliar with it. But a lot of our work is centered in those rights. And then in the pre or in the investigation side, the pre-charge side of the cases, that is what we do. A lot of it is just following up with detectives and helping the survivor during the investigative phase. Now, for other people, they may have those cases get charged. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen as often as we would like, but when the cases get charged, our work starts to shift a little bit in the criminal sphere. But we are able to assert the victim's rights in court. We are able to go in, advocate for them when various victims' issues comes up, whether it be, requesting privileged documents. We have that issue come up a lot, or the survivor isn't being notified of court dates. We're able to go in and say, hey, this is the person's rights. We're here to assert those. Please acknowledge them as a participant in the case. And it really does help a survivor feel more heard and acknowledged in a process where they sometimes feel very unclear and left out, even though it is about a situation that happened to them. Our office also has Title IX help, which with our administration, things are changing so often. But we do support survivors and asking for accommodations and accountability through Title IX. And that could be asking schools, whether it be K through 12 or universities, to do investigations, to issue reports, to help a survivor understand what's going on, or maybe they need to change their schedule. We are the person that helps them do that. And a lot of survivors are they're very grateful for that. A lot of them don't ever go to hearing on those Title IX cases, particularly in the universities, but even getting the accommodations really helps them. Maybe you need to miss a class, maybe you need therapy, or some other things to help you finish your program while you deal with the sexual assault. We also have services for human trafficking survivors in the form of records relief. So, like the ladies mentioned earlier, we have so many people come in that experience human trafficking. They tell us, while I was out, maybe I was arrested for this, maybe I have 50 arrests for solicitations, but no convictions. We can help them clear that record so they can move on and not be weighed down by their past. And it really does help them heal and move on once that person is able to exit the trafficking situation. So we do that. And then we also have recently started our Criminalized Survivors Project. And that is helping women who have been survivors of human trafficking that may be incarcerated. And it could be like, again, helping to get their records clear, or helping to get their sentence reconsidered, and really bringing out to light, well, this person may have done something that wound them up here, but please consider these other facts that they may have been a victim and that could have gotten them in this situation. And that has been a really rewarding practice for us. And then we have a more expansive portion of our legal services, which is all under the civil realm. And that could be asking for orders of protection or any other kind of protective order from someone who has experienced sexual harm, whether it be, an intimate partner that they live with. It could be someone that they encountered on the street or someone that they were close to, maybe a friend. And we're able to get those protective orders in the criminal courts to make sure that they feel safe and that they don't have to continuously encounter this person out in their life. We also have a very thriving employment practice that has been built out recently. where maybe our survivor was assaulted on the job or assaulted by someone that they work with, and we're able to help them get a compensation for the time that they may have missed work because of that assault and damages because they were assaulted on the job. And last but not least, we also do gender-based violence claims. Most of the time, we work on those claims with other firms, but we're able to give advice on them. And those are for people seeking civil compensation or like money damages from being sexually assaulted, whether as a child or as an adult. Those claims have really strict timelines. So if you think someone may qualify for that kind of work or that kind of lawsuit, it's really important that they speak to a lawyer because again, the statute of limitations is so quick on those. We like to really get the person the information so they can decide if they want to file a claim or not. But those claims are essentially, hey, when I was this age, I was assaulted by this person. I did not want this to happen to me. Unfortunately, it did. I want some sort of civil remedy from it. Most cases are pretty cut and dry, but again, because the time limit is so strict, a lot of people miss the opportunity to file their claims. But what I like to say is if you ever meet somebody out or if you encounter someone, whether it be through your work or through a friend or maybe again out in your community and they come to you and say, hey, I've been assaulted, it's very important to listen to them, to support them. And if they're ready to do something or move forward, have them get legal advice. Don't just rely on what you see on the internet or what you've heard from other people's cases or I know we all are, watching the news and seeing all these celebrity cases come up. Don't compare yourself to them. Get the legal analysis based on your own situation. So please send them over to us our way. Our website is case.org, CAASE.org. And if they want to speak to someone, they can. You can send an email. You can call and say, hey, I'm a survivor. I want to know what my legal options are. And an intake specialist will connect that survivor with an attorney to talk about their options. They're under no obligation to pay. You don't have to do anything following the advice. It's just great to get the information sometimes. Are there any questions, any thoughts? I know I said a mouthful. I wish that there was an easier way to condense this, but that's why I have this visual here in case you want to look at it.
No, Melanie, that was great. Thank you. I'm just checking to see if we have any questions from anyone, either on Zoom or in the audience. And we do not currently, but thank you for your time as well. We really appreciate all the guest speakers that are able to come and talk at these meetings. I had the opportunity to meet people from both organizations at a sexual assault awareness event at Concordia University, and thought that they would be great people to contribute to our community safety meeting this month, given the topic. So again, we appreciate you. I'm going to move on to just some River Forest Police Department service reminders and a couple other things that we have coming up. Me 1 second, we're going to share the screen. Okay, great. I will start talking about these. So, just a reminder, we like to put this on here every meeting. These are some of the River Forest Police Department's free services that we offer. Emergency ID bracelet program. We're still doing that. We've talked about it before. It's really great for people that, for example, anyone that suffers from dementia, autism, if you have a loved one that has anything, any sort of, developmental disabilities, things like that, allergies to medications, all of these different things can be put on a bracelet. So that way, if they should come in contact with the police department, we are able to better serve them safely and then make sure that we get them home safely to you. Frontline portal, we have overnight parking, our vacation watch system, and then the key holder portal in there. I'm going to touch base a little bit afterwards about our bicycle registrations that are now also available on that frontline portal. Residential security surveys, I will come out and do a review of the outside and inside of your residence with you to see where things could be improved, or if you have any specific questions. We are still offering the Hyundai and Kia steering wheel locks, child safety seat inspections, We have River Forest Community Safety, which was previously iSearch, that we partner with the River Forest Township on, and that is coming to an end now. We're doing our presentations currently at Roosevelt Middle School for 6th and 8th grade. And it's interesting. We do talk with them a little bit about a lot about cyber safety and a little bit about sextortion, which our speakers brought up earlier. So while it's not a good topic, I'm glad to see that we're all on the same page and we're all working towards the same thing to try and educate these kids. We have our Too Good for Drugs program. That's 5th grade at about 4 different schools here in River Forest. That's done for the year. Our Junior Citizens Police Academy, that is going to be August 4th through August 8th this year, Monday through Friday. Applications with that should be for that should be out shortly. We are partnering with the Oak Park Police Department again. So we are just working on finalizing things on both ends, and we'll get those out for people to start submitting. They'll be available. The information will come up on the village website and they can be picked up at either police department. Okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about, just with the weather getting nicer, kids are going to be out of school here shortly in the next month and a month and a half. Bike and exercise safety. It's a great village where people love to be outside, but you have to keep in mind, especially at night, try to stay visible. Pedestrians, it's really important that you stay on those sidewalks and you're walking in those crosswalks when you're crossing the street. You can't always count on other people to pay attention, but just do the best you can to keep yourself safe. Regarding bicycles, per state law, you are required after dusk and dark time to have that bicycle light and reflector on that bicycle. Bicycles have the same rights, but they also have a lot of the same duties as those driving vehicles do. So please make sure we're paying attention to stop lines, stop signs and traffic signals. Bike locks. I drove past a couple of the schools today while I was out, and I was trying to count how many different bikes I saw that were not locked. We talked to them about this in our presentations. But those of you that are parents or guardians listening, please encourage them to actually utilize their bike locks. We don't want them to have to go throughout the summer with all their friends riding around and they're not able to because their bike got taken. Helmets. Another thing I noticed today, we still have some that we are giving out for those that live, work, or go to school in River Forest under the age of 18. We have a handful left, and we are again partnering with River Forest Chocolates to pass out those bonbon coupons. So if the kids are seen wearing a helmet, our officers will pass those out to them. They can go into River Forest Chocolates and get a free truffle. So we're trying to encourage some safe behaviors and good practices when people are out enjoying the summertime. I mentioned the bicycle registration. That QR code will bring you to that frontline portal where you can register your bike. That's, like we mentioned, a free service. Very easy to do. You can even upload a picture. We will mail you a sticker in the mail. So that way, if your bike were to be lost and we recover it, we know how to get it back to you. And then also if your bike were stolen and we recovered it, the same thing. So either that QR code or that website or the URL that's underneath there will take you there. We just were at the 5th annual River Forest Community Bike Exchange a couple weekends ago. And that's the only time we register them in person. And we got about 87 bikes registered, which is great. So it's a free service. It's just one more thing to keep your property safe and make sure that it gets returned to you. So please utilize that. Upcoming events, celebrating Seniors Week. We are hosting a pancake breakfast here at Village Hall. It's going to be at the fire department on Thursday, May 15th. The time on that is 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. There's going to be a couple different discussions that we're having in presentations. I know I'm going to be going over fraud and scams. We also have the next day, the Duncan event, Cop on a Rooftop. We did this last year. We partner with Forest Park Police Department. We'll be at the Duncan on Madison. All donations go to Special Olympics Illinois. And for the Torch Run, it was a great event last year. We had a really good turnout, so please feel free to stop by. We will be selling. They have t-shirts, hats, tumblers, all sorts of different things. And at the very least, you can get a coupon for a free coffee or donut. So please stop by if you have the time. That is from 5 a.m. to noon. And again, that's the Dunkin' on Madison. Then the last thing I have, I just wanted to remind everyone about the Memorial Day parade and celebration. It's the 100-year anniversary. This will begin at 9:30 a.m. up there. The information is all there for you. You can also find this on the village website, but it begins at the intersection of Ashland and Augusta. It's going to travel south on Ashland, west on Lake, and it's going to end at Keystone Park, where we have the celebration. There's music, there's a free hot dog lunch for all attendees. There will be a no siren zone this year from Augusta to Iowa to accommodate those sensitive attendees. And then if you need any more information regarding that, this is something that we partner with the River Forest Park District, the Kiwanis, and that information is all on. It's kind of hard to see with the blue, but it's the River Forest Park District page. You can look up Memorial Day celebration for any more details or to register your groups to be a part of the parade. That is all I have. I'm going to turn it over to Detective Denise Cermeno.
Thank you, Megan. I just have a few reminders, just kind of stemming of what Officer Drake spoke about. A lot of good things come with the weather. That also brings up some crime. Just kind of going off of what Officer Drake mentioned, the bikes, we do see all the kids riding around in bikes, but that also brings a lot of theft reports for those kids that are running to Jewel, grabbing a drink and a snack. They're not locking up the bikes. At the schools, we get those all the time. The failure to register really doesn't help us at all. I can't tell you how many bikes we've been able to recover with us having that information re readily available, the serial numbers, even just having, I've recovered a couple with just even just service stickers from like Will and Sprocket and stuff like that. They're very cooperative with us, so we've been able to work hand in hand to locate whoever serviced the bike last. They're really nice with telling us, hey, this bike belongs to so and so. They just got it serviced last month. So definitely make sure that you are locking those bikes up. Some of those are not very cheap. So I know we have a lot of upset parents that, sometimes we can get the offender, but when we don't recover the bike. So that's just a little reminder, with the warm weather, also, we have a lot of workers in town, contractors. Everyone's working on home improvement projects, spring cleaning projects like that. So we tend to see a little bit of a rise in work truck burglaries, more relating to like the contractors. They're running in and out of the trucks all day. They leave their equipment out. They leave sometimes their personal belongings, wallets, stuff like that, cell phones. We do see, occasionally people driving through town. They see those opportunities. They take the tools, they take the wallets. Then we have people using the credit cards of the contractors at other locations. So, just a reminder, if you're having any work done, letting them know, hey, make sure it's a nice town. It's relatively safe, but we do see those pretty often where people are driving around. Crimes of opportunity, right? With that. Also, home improvement scams. So, if you're making sure that you're getting work done at your house, that it's someone that has been approved by the village. I know the village a lot has a contractor list online that you can look up. If they aren't writing any sort of permits, that's probably a red flag. You can always check them out on the Better Business Bureau. No one should be soliciting at your door. That's usually a red flag. We see those pretty often, especially in the northern end of town. Usually they tend to target people that live alone, usually on the older side, and offer really good deals for cash. And then it ends up being not a good, very good job. So I always like reminding people, making sure that if you have any elder relatives in town, making sure that they're not allowing any services on their property that aren't solicited by someone, and no one should be ringing your doorbell saying, I'm working on Joe across the street. Can I do yours too? And if they do call us, that's what we're here for. I just had one. I was doing a simple follow-up with a very young, very nice young lady. And she's like, hey, yeah, I've got this nice guy that just showed up at my house. He's going to work on my concrete work or on my concrete. And I'm like, wait a minute. Did you call him over? And she's like, no, he just rang my doorbell. I can't tell you. We were there within, 5 minutes? Ended up being a scam. That person was actually being actively monitored by Chicago police. So we cite them, get them out of town, kick them out of here, and let the city finish their investigation, right? So with the home, with the nice weather, also we have the windows open. We got the fresh air going. We got the dogs running in and out of the backyard. We leave the doors open. So making sure you're resecuring all of that stuff if you are leaving the house, even if it's second stories. I can't tell you, occasionally we get the second story burglaries. I can't explain how they're doing it. They're climbing the furniture. They're getting on ladders. I don't know if they're bringing ladders. It just happens, you know. It's not my area of expertise, but that's how they get paid. So making sure you're locking all that stuff if you're leaving town, even if it's just to run to the store, okay? That includes cars. You know, people are still wandering the streets in the warm weather at night. So making sure you're locking your doors and your cars. Don't leave your windows open in your cars either. With that, the reminder of just the vacation watch that Officer Drake mentioned. It's if you're going on vacation, you know, everyone starts going on vacation once it gets warmer. You want to get out of here. The kids are on break. Sign up for the frontline service. It'll tell us to the T if you have an alarm system, if there should be a dog sitter on site, what that person's name is. Is there automatic lights in the house? If there's lights on and we're doing a patrol on your house and there shouldn't be lights on, then, you know, we might look into it a little. So all of that you can do. It's free. You can sign up. I believe you can you still call in with the Westcom? So you can call in, call the non-emergency too, and they may be able to assist you with that. Or so. And then just, you know, the best crime prevention tool is being a good neighbor. If you know all your neighbors on your block and there's a truck that just pulled up in your neighbor's driveway and you know that they're out of town or on their monthly doctor visit, give us a call. We're there to make sure that that person should be there. And if they're not, I can't tell you how many times we've showed up and it's the dog sitter, but they don't mind because they know they're allowed to be there. And if they're not, then what's their business in town? So just a little short reminder of all the little things with the spring coming up and the nice weather. Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody for presenting this evening and for Officer Drake and Detective Zermano giving their presentations, and for Deputy Clerk Masella providing our AV operations for this evening. Does anybody online have questions, Luke? Thank you. Anybody in the audience here tonight? Scooter question. Megan, I'm going to let you field the scooter question.
We are encouraging people to wear helmets, whether it's bicycles, scooters, skateboards, whatever mobile device they're using out there to get around. We've implemented the different things like our partnership with the River Forest community, River Forest Chocolates, to try and encourage the kids. And when we do talk to them, we also try to get them to go home and not bully, but forcefully persuade their parents that they also should be wearing their helmets to set that good example. It's difficult. I mean, you see motorcyclists out there that aren't wearing them and things like that. So it is, you know, we have the village ordinance where we can cite juveniles, especially, for not wearing them. We're trying now to go the route of encouragement rather than that. But that if that's what it's going to come to, we will have to start issuing those local ordinance citations for it. Does that answer your question? It is concerning. I mean, I saw them all flying today on their way to school, and I was like, there's one, two, three, more than not. More are not wearing them than they actually are. And those that even have them on their handlebars are even a little bit more frustrating. So we are working with the kids on that to try and implement some better habits, and then also have them encourage, you know, their guardians and parents to do it. So no, absolutely. We understand. Thank you.
Jan? Right. Okay. So there were two questions. The first question was regarding ICE, not the frozen stuff, but Immigration's Custom and Enforcement Group agency in operating in River Forest. We haven't had any interactions with ICE agents in River Forest up to this point regarding the current administration's policies. And we, I know there were some anecdotal reports. Somebody thought that it was the ICE at an apartment building in town, but it was really just the police responding to an alarm. Sometimes the back of our police vests say police on them, and the back, the last three letters of that are ICE. And I think sometimes people get a quick glimpse or just maybe assume they see four or five police officers. But no, we haven't had any instances where we've had to interact with agents from the from ICE. The second question was regarding ongoing epidemic of ding dong ditchers in River Forest. We've worked closely with the people that have been affected by that. There's an instance in town where juveniles are perpetually going to the same home over and over and over. And it's been going on not for just this year, this spring, or leading into the summer now, but also the year before and the year before. So we've been working closely with the people that are affected by it. And we've also, Officer Drake has worked with the schools and has begun speaking about the incidents at the school. The kids return, and it's not always the same kid, obviously. That would be even more ridiculous. But what it appears to be is it'll be, let's say, I'm just going to use an example. This is not necessarily the case. A sixth grader that's going over to a home, ringing the doorbell and taking off. And then 2 hours later, another sixth grader comes by and does the same thing. Typically, since we're familiar with where the children are operating and committing their nuisances, we've been fortunate enough to be able to locate most of the kids, or ultimately some of the more egregious offenders, where they're able to be identified with assistance with from neighbors, friends, school personnel. So we've been fortunate in that sense. But again, Officer Drake's been working with the schools to address that and get the word out to parents. And it's been relatively effective. However, it still keeps happening. So if you're out there in TV land or in internet land or in the audience, and you have a youngster between the ages of probably fifth grade and eighth grade, just maybe share a little bit of knowledge with them about the bad things that can happen if you go to the, you know, if you annoy the wrong person. I'm not saying the people that have been targeted or the various people that have fallen to the pranks are are willing to do something horrible, but you never know whose doorbell you're ringing. It's just like you never know who you're honking your horn at in the car next to you when you're in traffic as an adult. You never know who might be the person that you just set off that day. And then the flip side is the if it were your house, you know, especially if you're a kid who just wants to maybe just hang out, text on your phone and play Xbox or PS, whatever version we're on now, I think 5, and you have to keep getting up to go answer the door, that might be able to, you know, mom, the door is ringing. Well, you get it. You're closer. Okay. And nobody's there. And then 5 minutes later, it happens again. So the persistence, though, I was going through this and then I kind of lost my train of thought, was it's become almost, and it's instances where, say you're 6th grade, okay, now you're in 7th grade, we don't do that anymore. But the 7th graders and the 8th graders tell the 6th graders about back when I was in 6th grade, what we used to do is go ring this doorbell. And then it happens again. And again, and again. So, again. Again. We encourage folks out there to talk with their kids about the dangers and the how frustrating it would be if it were you, if it was your home. The kids that have been stopped have been cited under local ordinances. It's a nuisance crime. It's not something that we can, nor would we want to lock children up for doing something as ridiculous as it is. But again, when you compound it with the exponential amount of times it's happened and the frustration levels of the people that it's affected, it's quite frankly ridiculous at this point. And that's where it's not going to be, we're just going to have a nice talk with your kids and turn them back over to your kids will be cited. There's no doubt. There's no exception. So something that we shouldn't have to take such a hard stance on, but as often as it's happened, it's not acceptable. So I'm glad that this is one of the bigger concerns that we're discussing tonight. And that's something that I know all of our officers share, is that we're glad that this is one of the bigger problems. And we hope that it stops, but we hope maybe that level of crime is what we have to deal with, especially as we come into the warmer months. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am. I appreciate that. The comment was about our bike patrol officers that were out there today, and they've been out there for the past couple of weeks, just providing extra patrols and being able to use their high visibility yet low footprint to navigate through the neighborhoods in a way where officers and vehicles might not, they might stick out a little bit more, where a police officer on a bike can sometimes get quicker through. Especially during rush hour traffic, they can get from one end of Lake Street to the other during school crossings than anybody in a car. So, especially with the new e-bikes that we got this past year, so they're really great. The officers don't have to. The idea isn't necessarily for them to go, you know, flying through town but the idea is when they get to the place that they're going, they're not out of wind because they had to go from North and Harlem to Thatcher and Madison and riding their bike to try to get to a caller to help out. So, but no, it's been a great, great asset. We're thankful to have those bikes. It makes it more pleasurable for the officers and it allows them to get around and maneuver a lot more quickly. So thank you. Any other questions? Luke, anything else on the interwebs? All right. Well, we thank everybody in attendance here in person for the meeting, and thank you for everybody that joined us online and for those who view us in the future.